All right, welcome to the session. My name is Venki Veeraraghavan. I am a program manager in the SharePoint, what they call the base team. It's the core kernel team that runs a bunch of the runtime and storage aspects of SharePoint. My team also delivers both the sign-in experience. We also own the OAuth framework that allows servers and services to call into SharePoint. And that session is happening right across the door. So it's too bad that both the sign-in stuff got scheduled at the same time. And we also do some of the work that was described in the sharing aspects of SharePoint. How do you share to external users who are outside the tenancy? So those are the things that my team does. I'm here to talk about the sign-in experience. You might wonder why we have a session for that. It's because when we started using SharePoint Online as a core day-to-day system, we learned a lot of stuff, both from Microsoft internal and from our beta customers, on how the cloud, running in the cloud, is different than running intranet. And there's a bunch of very subtle stuff that needs to take place. And it was not obvious at all when we started it, because when we drew the architecture diagram, it all looked pretty clean. We had arrows, and it all worked. But then when we started seeing the user experience and what people complained about, there was a lot of subtle decisions that had to take place that we generally don't do as SharePoint admins. So just as a quick thing, so I understand who's here, how many of you are SharePoint admins or run SharePoint clusters? All right, pretty much everyone. How often have you worked with your identity management peers in your organization? Yeah, that's what I thought. So the reason is, over the last 8 years, and certainly I've been a huge part of building this stuff, we built it such that SharePoint basically just runs by itself, and we have a bunch of connections outside, but generally SharePoint admins control their destiny for identity. How you sign in, how you do import, but when we go to the cloud, it actually goes through a pipe that is maintained by the identity management professionals. And so we really want to talk about sort of some of the discussions we want to have over there. So that's the thing. So I'm going to start by just basically talk about two things. One is, how does sign-in actually work? I will sort of give you behind the scenes of how the data flows and what actually happens to SharePoint, and how sign-in is related to a directory, and how they meet, and how, if they don't meet, bad things happen. Basically, you get called. And so basically, I want to sort of show you that thing, and I want to show you a small demo of the critical points in that flow. I thought a lot long and hard about the demo, and the problem with demos with sign-in is, like, you put username and password, and you're done. Right? It works, and it's supposed to do that. In fact, most people complain that putting username and password is the problem. They would not even want to do that. Just let me in, which is the end user perspective. So I'm going to try to show you how to get close to that. And one of the things we're going to talk about is why it's not quite the same and what work you have to do to help users understand that. And second, we'll talk about how to make the experience as good as possible and some of the sort of improvements that you have to go through. All right. So just to get started, on-premise, SharePoint has basically two modes. There's Windows Claims mode, which works with the Active Directory, and you have both sign-in and the directory sync using Active Directory, sort of getting the stuff into SharePoint. For pluggable stuff, we have SAML claims that we sort of import stuff into SharePoint. We sign into SharePoint using SAML, and you import directory data using our built-in FIM. So online, it gets a little bit more interesting, because there are other parts of the puzzle that's in there. And we'll sort of describe what those parts are. So first is organizational account. And so organizational account is an account that was that is a service that runs, that Microsoft runs. It's under the name of Azure AD. And it is the account that users have with the O365 service. There's Microsoft account, which if you're using Windows 8 or Windows Live, it's the account that Microsoft issues to consumers to identify them to Microsoft services. And then there's corporate AD, which is the stuff we are very familiar with. And similarly, on the directory side, there is the MS Online directory, which is the directory we have online, and then your corporate directory that's on-prem, and they are synced together between the two. And there are lots of ways in which that can go well or bad, and we'll talk about some of them and what the effects are. So, so as far as users are concerned, and this is a sort of key difference, users expect SharePoint to just be in the internet when they're one day, and then later you're going to say, oh, I'm going to introduce SharePoint Online, and I'm now rolling that out. With the exception of the URL, the SharePoint looks the same, right? And so so end users just expect the same kind of things. All the stuff they used to work on before, they expect the same thing to work. But there's a whole stack underneath that's different, and you guys are in charge of that stack. And so you need to sort of work to make sure that the stack does everything so the end user sort of gets the best experience. All right, so here's a small box, and you'll see I did this so I'd get some drama going. This is a small box. There's a, let's see, is there a, I'll use the mouse. So just a very simple thing, the SP web app is where, you know, your SharePoint UI is rendered. You use Active Directory to do sign-in, so you're doing Windows claim sign-in, so the green arrow is how authentication flows. And then you import into AD and into the SharePoint profile store, and when you sign up over here, we get your username and ID, like SID. We look it up in the profile, and we match it, and all the social stuff works, the newsfeed works, all the stuff just works. So this is on-prem. This is online, right? There's lots of stuff. And we'll go through what the different parts are and why they are there and what they do. So let's start with the basics. So this thing in the middle, this is our sort of online AD, right? It contains sort of two components. It contains the organizational account system. This is the one that issues tokens, right? In AD, there are two parts of AD. There is the part that issues tokens, like Kerberos, and there's the part that actually stores information about users and groups, and that's the directory part. And so in online, we have it in two separate endpoints. There's a directory endpoint that contains information about users and groups, and there's an authentication endpoint that is the org account system. So what happens, I'm not going to describe all of those parts, I'm just going to tell you a little bit of why we have this system. Because SharePoint is one part of O365. There is Exchange Online, there is Link Online, and basically all of them use the same set of users and groups that exist in online, and we provide a seamless experience across all of them. And all of us trust the org account system to issue tokens, and you can sort of get into our respective services. So if you're using SharePoint Online today, and you're also you also have Exchange Online, you'll just see an Outlook or Mail tab next to it. You click on Mail, and you're signed in over there as well. Even though Exchange is running in a different data center and it's using different information about you, it all just looks the same to the user. So that's the reason why we have a central hub, which is our online AD, it's Azure AD. Right? So now let me try to make this a little bit simpler. There are two basic use cases for Azure AD. There's the non-federated customer. This is a customer who is small or medium, who signs up to Office 365, creates and manages accounts online, and resets password, and people just get there, type in the username and password, and move on. Right? That is the simple case. And then the more complicated case is on the right, the federated account, and that one is about the organization having lots of accounts and lots of identity and compliance policies and wants to manage identity on-prem and wants to sort of push the information out to the cloud so they can manage it in one place, they can provide single sign-on with on-premise. So that's the federated case. And we'll spend a lot of time on the federated case because a lot of large customers have this case. All right. So let's do the simple case. So here, what happens is you go to the MS Online portal. How many of you are actually have SharePoint online accounts or tenancies? Great. So all of you have gone to the portal and created users, right? You've gotten the BankEV at your tenant name dot on Microsoft.com. You've got an account name like that. And then some of you might have also gone and put your domain, verified your domain, and then gotten your accounts to say BankEV at contoso.com. So this is that simple case, which says, I actually have accounts managed and authoritative online, and the Azure AD is the authoritative source of the directory and authentication. So what happens here is that you create your users over here, you create your groups, and the portal actually stores all that information in the directory, which is called MS Online DS. And then it creates an account and password store it's put inside the org account system. And so this is where you sign in, and this is where information about your groups and your users are stored in here. So what happens is once you have the store over here, we sync that information down into SharePoint such that it is close to us in our own data center. So you'll notice that this AD service actually is a distinct service from SharePoint. And it actually runs in its own data center. It's managed by a different set of ops people, and the AD team runs it, right? And so what we have to do is a lot of our software requires the directory to be close by, whether it's in the form of profile store or in the form of AD. And so we actually copy the information down to the SharePoint data center so that it's low latency and close by. So that's the sync. And then for authentication, we actually do trust. So we just do a, we have a trusted provider to org ID, and we take tokens from them. So basically, the normal flow would be a user would go to SharePoint. He'll be unauthenticated. We'll redirect them to org account, and there'll be a username password challenge. You type in username and password, hit go, and then it verifies it against the against its store, issues a token, and sends it back to SharePoint web app. Right? At this point, we will go look in the SharePoint profile to find that identity, and that information would have flowed via sync in here, and your social page is filled with information. It has your follows, it has your friends, it has all that stuff in there. So that is the simple case. It looks pretty close to what the AD, the on-prem system looks like. Now I'm going to move to the complicated case, which is the federated case. So federated case, you've made an explicit decision to manage your identities on-prem, right? You're going to have your processes, your AD, FIM, all those things built in on-prem, and you're trying to manage all that stuff, and you want the cloud to have a projection of that information such that the services that you're on the cloud are sort of get to use it. And there are two important benefits to this thing. One is you get single sign-on. So if you're on a domain join machine and you've signed in once into Windows, you get access to SharePoint with a couple of redirects. I mean, that's what the demo will show you. But you actually don't have to do a username password challenge again. The second is that you control creation and deletion of users using your existing procedures. Right? You don't have to go to a new portal and manage the list and everything else. All that happens using your existing processes. So that's really the, why most large enterprises sort of go for that, go for this mode. And so now let me tell you what happens in terms of sign-in. So we talked about sign-in last time. So what happens here is the imagine the user is over here. He's sitting in the intranet, goes and hits the SharePoint web app. He does HTTP, you know, URL. It says you're unauthenticated, it sends you to org account, and you're supposed to put your username here so that you can figure out which customer of ours, because this is a multi-tenant authentication service, you have to tell it which tenant you are in. So you put your username in venkiv@microsoft.com, it'll redirect you to ADFS, which is where the sign-in challenge happens and the negotiation happens. You get signed in because your domain joined, and then that presents a token to org account, which then presents a token to SharePoint, and it works. So that's the sign-in flow. On the directory flow, your local AD is, there's a dirsync appliance, so to speak. It's a software that you download from MS Online Portal. You install it, and it sort of sucks the information from here into MSODS, and then it just flows on to us. And so basically, again, the trick is to make sure when you show up over here, the information from here goes via both flows and end up matching, right? That really is how federated sign-in works. Okay. So now it doesn't look quite as bad. It just looks like two parts. And they're actually, there's a single point of merging, and then federated and non-federated customers look the same to us. So one of the reasons why for this design is each one of our services, like SharePoint and Exchange and Link, in this model, notice we only know one party. We know Azure AD. Right, we have a sync relationship with Azure AD, we understand when we optimize that flow, and then Azure AD does the hard work of connecting and maintaining trust with every single customer and their identity management system. So we sort of like separating the concerns where Exchange and SharePoint and Link, we are working on the things we are good at, which is providing mail or collaboration services, and AD is doing what it does well, which is identity management. And so now you'll see why that pipe, which is complex, is managed by the Identity Management Pro. Right? That's where the stuff happens. You, on the other hand, are controlling the SharePoint side. And so when things go wrong in this thing, in the whole pipe, things go bad. And so I'll give you a bunch of ways in which things can go bad and what the kind of decisions you need to take. So that's really my thing that says the same system works for both. All right, here's my demo. All right, so I'm going to start. Yes, we have a, okay, so I have in private turned on, and this is for, I'll tell you why in a second. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my Microsoft tenancy, microsoft.my.sharepoint.com. You'll see that Microsoft has a tenancy on SharePoint Online. We have social feed is hosted at microsoft.my.sharepoint.com. It's a favorite of mine. I go there all the time. So that's my URL. As an end user, that's all I know. I click on that thing. Underneath the covers, you should know, Microsoft has set up a federated relationship with OrgID and with Azure AD, because we have 90 plus thousand people, hundreds of thousands of groups, and we have very distinct mechanisms for managing and doing compliance on them. And so we have this sort of federated relationship. Okay, so I'm going to go hit. Okay, if you're really careful, keep watching the URL, and I'll tell you what's going on. Oh, great. Really? I have no idea. Okay, let me just show you the... pardon? The AN? SharePoint underscore 12? Okay, there we go. Okay, let's try this again. Okay, there we go. So the first thing we did was we hit microsoft.-my.sharepoint.com, and because I'm in private mode, there are no cookies, right? It was a brand new session. I had no cookies, no authentication cookies. So what SharePoint said was, hey, I don't know who you are, and you're trying to access an authenticated resource, so please go to my identity provider, which is Azure AD, and sign in, right? And so this is a sign-in page. So if I'm a small business or a non-federated customer, I would just type in my username and password. So I do venkiv@microsoft.com, tab. So this is where the interesting stuff happens. So what happens is we figured out, when you do venkiv@microsoft.com, it says, oh, you are a customer who has federated accounts. So you're actually managing your username and password and everything else on-prem. And so it grayed out my password field, and it said, you're required to sign in at microsoft.com. And it said, remember me, so it actually knows who you are. So I signed in at microsoft.com. Okay, let me actually increase this. Right? So now, if you notice the URL, I'm now at, oh, wait, that's not a good idea. Okay, I'm at corp.sts@microsoft.com. So this is a corporate ADFS that's on the edge that can talk to the intranet and get do Windows integrated auth. And because I'm outside the intranet, it's asking me for a username password. Now, one of the things it does is notice how when OrgID sent the redirect to ADFS, it actually sent the username. It said, the user typed in venki@microsoft.com. So I'm going to send it to you in the URL. And this page, which is a custom page that your identity provider in IT pro in your company who owns this page, they copy that URL and put it in the username field. So now I'm going to type in my username. Not my username, my password. I say sign in. Okay, if you watch this, it's logged me in. It logged me in into OrgID, and then it sent me to Microsoft My. And here is my social page, right? So the key things to notice in this one, let me just go back to this guy. The key thing to note, oh, wait one second, how did I get? Sorry. So the key thing to note here is that when you went to the org ID page, I had to tell you who I am so that org ID can decide where to send me. Because remember, the org account service has trust with hundreds of thousands of customers, right? They all have their own URLs, and they set it up. And so putting your username in there is what tells us where to go. So the domain is registered with us, and we know which URL to send it to. And you'll notice that this is different than what we've ever done in the internet, right? No one's, the technical term for this thing is called home realm discovery, right? That is, it helps the system find out which realm, security realm, you're owned by, and who can actually authorize you, authenticate you, right? So it tries to discover the URL to send it to. It's great for security practices. It's terrible for users. They're like, what is this thing again? I don't fully understand. Why do I have to type it in here and type it in again? So that is a new thing, and we can't actually quite get rid of it at this point. And so we sort of have to be able to deal with it. And I'll talk about techniques you can do to help with this. The second one is you kind of want to say, keep me signed in, and we'll talk about why that's useful too, because you want to do this dance as few times as possible, right? And so that's the browser sign-in. Now I'm going to show something else, which is, so to date, we have always done browser sign-in for everything into SharePoint. If you're not using Windows Integrated Auth, we use browser sign-in. So if you're using Office 2007, SP2, or Office 2010, you have this thing called MSOFBA. It's a little window that pops up that allows you to sign in. If we use cookies and we redo that thing. In 2013, because we were building sort of cloud-first service, the Office client has been updated to actually what we call actively sign in. That means the client itself goes and signs itself in and gets a token. So we'll talk about that. I'll show that in a second. So this is PowerPoint, and this is me doing the deck. And if you look at this, this deck is stored in my site, Microsoft-my.sharepoint.com, personal banky, blah, 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 documents, right? It's on my SkyDrive Pro, and that's where it's stored. Now, the way it signs in to put the document over there is via the sign-in over here. So what it does is that if you notice this thing, first of all, Office knows who you are, and that is different than before, right? Previously, Office didn't know who you were. It just said, if I'm going to try to access an account, access a resource, the resource needs authorization, it will pop up a dialog, get a cookie, and then produce the cookie and get to the resource. But Office didn't know who you were. It just had a cookie, right? In this case, Office actually does know who you are. It draws a picture for you. It goes and gets information from AD and puts it up there. Now, it actually knows you as two different people, two different accounts, vankyvee@microsoft.com and vankyvee@msn.com. And this is an important thing because I'm running Windows 8. And in Windows 8, you can log into the machine with your domain join machine, right? So you have a domain account. And then you can do a second activity, which is you can connect your own personal Microsoft account to that to the domain account. So there are two different accounts that Windows knows about at this time. And Office is able to talk to Windows and get those two accounts. And so what happens is I can now use PowerPoint to talk to my SkyDrive at work, my SharePoint SkyDrive. And I'm also able to store an Excel sheet of my house budget inside my personal SkyDrive on SkyDrive.com, right? Because Office knows both IDs, and it's able to use the IDs depending on which resource it's going to. And so this is an important thing. Now, if I look at Switch account, the current account is this, and if I actually try to, the reason it knows this account is because I'm on a domain join machine. That's how it knows it. If I'm on a Surface RT and I had the sign-in thing, it's not domain joined, and so what it'll do is it'll say, use your organizational account, type in username and password. And what Office will then do is it'll take the username and password, it will then talk to your ADFS, it'll discover the ADFS in your company, it'll present the ADFS, it'll present the username credentials, get the SAML token, give it to org ID, get an org ID token and give it to SharePoint, and then get a SharePoint token. Right? It does all that underneath the covers, and you never see any of it. And it stores the username and password on the client. So once you're signed into the client, you're signed in. And it knows how to do that. And either in domain join machine, it'll do it without asking for username and password, or if you're on a non-domain join machine, it'll ask you the password once. So that is the client. And if you notice over here, let me see whether I actually have a recent. I actually don't have the. And you'll notice that because it has both sign-in, it's actually able to roam a bunch of settings, so it remembers all the places you've been to. So my personal SkyDrive is over here, and my SharePoint document libraries are over here. And Office is able to sort of talk to both of them without any further sign-in because it knows who you are. And that's a big new improvement in 2013. We spent a lot of time on that one. Okay, so I just want to sort of call out a couple of the points. So just to recap the demo, Office can have multiple accounts. It sort of talks about organizational accounts, which are things that are issued by organizations used for Office 365. And then it has a concept of personal accounts, which is your Microsoft account. That's what you use to get to things like SkyDrive and Hotmail. And so you can use both of them at the same time. And so you'll notice over here, because of the connectedness, the organizational account is connected to my Microsoft account. And that's a feature in Windows 8. All right. So one more thing, finally, before I show you the screen. You'll notice that all these screens are all kind of different looking, and that's some of the challenges we've had internally as well as we talk about our partnership with IDM and how we sort of want to get forward. It turns out the ADFS is a shared resource, right? It's used by all kinds of use cases inside your company to access your health system, your fidelity system, or whatever else it is. ADFS is used in a lot of ways, and O365 happens to be one of them. And so when the design pattern for this is different than sort of just designing for O365, and there's a bunch of tension in there that I want to talk about next. All right, so just to, this is more for when you see the deck later. In sign-in, there are clearly two different ways to do it. There is passive, which is cookie-based. And when you're cookie-based, you have to, the browser actually doesn't know it is doing sign-in. That's the key point of passive. It's just following HTTP redirects, it's doing posts, but somewhere in there the cookies are getting dropped and the cookie contains all the auth information. And with cookies, there are two important modes to understand. There is the persistent mode, right? That means the cookie is shared across all the processes in your system. And there is session mode, which is the cookies only used inside that current process. Now, let me describe a little bit of the problem or sort of trade-off you're going to have with this thing. And this is going to be an interesting discussion that you're going to have with your IDM people. Office is multiple processes. There's Word.exe, Excel.exe, iExplorer.exe, Firefox.exe. They're all different processes as far as Windows is concerned. If someone says, look, we must have session cookies because it is more secure, right? There's no sign-in information on the hard drive. It's more secure. It is true. But the flip side is every time a user opens up any of these exes and tries to access the resource, he's going to get a sign-in experience. And this is when you're using passive mode, right? So there is a trade-off. Like, you can say, I want to be super secure, but I also now have sort of like put onto my user a bunch of work, and they will complain. I promise you they'll complain. They have complained to me a lot. And so you definitely get to do that. But there is a bit of tension. For instance, it totally makes sense to have session cookies in kiosks, right? Because you don't want to leave anything behind when you walk away just because you happen to walk away. So you want to just close the program, and you want to just walk away. And you want to not be signed in and have someone else have access to your thing. That makes sense. But it doesn't make sense when you have a private laptop like mine for me to constantly keep signing in on every single process. And so the reason we have the keep me signed in button that we allow the user to choose is because they get to choose, given my environment, given what I have, does it make sense to have keep me signed in or not keep me signed in, right? And this is part of the education that you'll have to do with your end users. The Office 2007 and 2010, we talked about, use this model. And then Active is the new stuff, and it is Office clearly knows that it's trying to do authentication, and it's doing everything securely. There is no cookies anywhere. There are tokens that are stored securely inside the machine. If you're using federated accounts, the username and password is stored securely in the machine as well. And so it's actually a better thing to do. But now you'll have a flip thing where if you're signing on the browser and you did persistent cookies, you're still not signing in the client because the client is using its own technology to sign in, right? And so there's little gaps that we're trying to work through, but right now that is where we are. All right. So I've sort of given you a feel for how it works underneath, why it works the way it does, and giving you how the end users see all that system. The one cool thing is they never see the directory part of the thing. They see a bunch of sign-in because that is the end user flow. You can't not sign in. But the directory stuff all happens underneath the covers. And at Microsoft, we have a hopelessly complicated AD structure, and there's a team of them working on trying to clean up the data and send it up to the cloud and make sure everything is good, but it's a big project for us. And so don't underestimate how difficult this part of the work is. And certainly as you're trying to onboard onto SharePoint Online on production basis, there's a lot of conversation to be had. So let me go through. This section talks about the kinds of conversations and the kinds of activities you guys need to do to ensure a great user experience. So I think about it as three things. You need to actively think about educating end users. This is something that we didn't do before. Before in SharePoint, you just signed in. And in fact, if you're using Windows Claims, you didn't sign in either. You just put your site up, click Windows Claims, and people just got in. Now, if you're doing SAML claims, clearly, some of you have done, there is more work, and some of this stuff will look familiar to you. Hey, you know, sign in. Why is there cookies? I know someone from GM is here, and I know they've had that conversation with me many a time. So some of those conversations are still true. So talk about end users. Then partner with your IDM pro. It turns out that whole pipe that we talked about, moving data from on-prem to online, is run by your identity management team. And just when I did the show of hands, not many of you generally talk to them a lot. And you have to talk to them a lot because there's a lot of questions that need to answer with them. And then finally, as your own content thing, there's a bunch of stuff you need to think about as you migrate content, as you think about content going up. And there's some specific gotchas that we have, technical limitations, and I'll sort of point some of them out, and we'll go from there. So this is what you need to do. This is a homework, right? Okay. So first thing, cloud sign-in is different than Windows sign-in. The earlier we accept that, the better. Because I think, you know, we tried a bunch of times to say, like, why is it not like Windows? Because it's not Windows. And it's just the way it is. And we are trying to do a bunch of work in Windows 8 and the future to sort of make the stuff merge again. But right now, it's not the same as Windows. So first, you need to explain to users why they need to sign in and what the username is. So here's the classic example. So what we did was we had a bunch of team sites that was on-prem. It was HTTP SharePoint /site/something. People are happily putting documents in there, you know, doing stuff. And then we said, hey, we're doing dog food. We're moving all these sites over to the cloud. And we did move them to the cloud. And then we said, oh, here's a new URL. And in fact, what we did was really clever. We said, if you go to that site, we'll redirect you to the cloud thing, which all worked great, until there was a sign-in page. And you know, you saw that O365 page with the sign-in thing. They were like, what is this? Because remember, as far as users are concerned, when you're in this Windows world, where everything is sign-in, silent, when you see an authentication prompt, something has gone wrong. If you remember Outlook, when it doesn't have a connection or something, it'll pop up a basic dialogue asking for username and password. Security folks always tell you, beware of the page that asks you for your password, because that's bad, because we set it up. So this is different, and you have to tell them this is going to happen. Now, when you're doing federated, you're not going to enter password there. You're going to have to go enter password into your ADFS page, which is the next page. So that's one. The second thing is, most people don't know what their login name is, right? And so especially if you're a big Windows shop and you have redmond/venkyv as your username, how did I go from redmond/venkyv to suddenly logging in as venky at microsoft.com? I just didn't know. Someone had to tell me, right? And it gets more interesting because the Windows doesn't require you to have this UPN name. It makes up its own, which are not usable often most of the time. And so people don't know that automatically, so you need to actually tell them. Some companies have sort of standardized on the UPN format, the email address format, but a lot of companies have not. And so it's actually an explicit step to go and say, no, please no, your email, your login name in Office 365 is X. And ideally, it's an email address because that's something they understand. But there, again, there are security considerations around that. I think in the military, they don't allow you to make your email address your login name because you can find out one part of your pair. How often should I sign in? So if you're a security guy, you want to sign in for as short a time as possible so that you can just get the job done and get out. That's more secure. If you're the end user, you never want to sign in. You just want to be signing in all the time. Just go and just party, right? And somewhere in that spectrum is where you're going to have to be. And that depends on what company you have, what resources you're trying to access. So at Microsoft, we have a classification system that says low business impact, medium business impact, high business impact. And we have different policies for how long tokens are valid for different kinds of content. So it is a discussion you should have because the people who own ADFS and the people who own AD have their point of view. And the people who are going to complain are the end users to you saying, how come I have to keep signing in? And so we need to start having that conversation about what the correct policy for this new cloud environment is. There are some very specific machine settings that sometimes need to happen. For instance, it would be great to put all the SharePoint Online URLs into the trusted sites list so that sign out works, the cookies are safely kept in the correct security domain. If you have a lot of Chrome users and your ADFS folks have turned on extended security, Chrome doesn't work with extended security. So we didn't know until we ran it. And it turns out the latest version of Firefox supports extended security, IE supports it, Chrome doesn't, the current version at least doesn't. And so there's a reg key that is in my deck, it's in the speaker notes that you can apply, and that sort of opts out of extended security. So there's all these little things, because what happens with Chrome is it'll just simply go in an infinite loop of login page. And they're like, I hate you, your shit doesn't work, right? And so we're like, no, that's not the problem, let's do this thing. The idea is that there's lots of little things, and they're all the tension between the security side, which is extranet, which is basically now you're using ADFS as your mainline collaboration work for inside the company, productivity work for inside the company. Most of the work before for ADFS used to be about accessing external resources or having external people come in, and that was a different security posture and a different way of thinking of the problem. And so you really need to go back and re-engage with the people in the security policies to figure out what is correct, because there are trade-offs between the two. I think just a little bit, it takes it from a slightly different angle. So previously, one of the cool things about the cloud is you can reach it from anywhere. I was on my Alaska flight down here, and I was just typing away on my deck, hit save, saved it to my local machine, uploaded it to my SkyDrive Pro on Microsoft, all just worked, right? I can't do that with my on-prem SharePoint because there's firewall. So I have no sign-in inside the firewall. I have no access outside the firewall. And with the cloud, I'm getting access everywhere, but now I have to sign in everywhere. And it's different. It's not like it's better or worse, it's just different. And you got to understand that it's different. You got to help your end users understand that. Users get to choose their own browser, and every browser has its own quirks. IE does integrated auth perfectly. Firefox doesn't. Firefox asks you for a username and password. And then Chrome has that extended security problem. So you have to know what your user population is. You need to work through to understand how you're going to generate, given your population, what the interesting issues are and how you're going to educate them. So that's something that you have to do yourself. SSO between rich client and browser, and this, I think, depends a little bit on whether you're using 2013 or 2010. If you're doing 2010 and you're doing keep me signed in, you are single signed on between the two. So if you sign in the browser, the client is signed in. If you sign in the client, the browser is signed in. That's nice. But if you're using 2013, it's no longer going to work that way. So again, it's a different thing. And then the final one is, remember that home realm discovery problem I described? You got to describe that problem. You got to put your username in, and it'll sign you out there. We're doing a ton of work between now and the final GA to make that page look even more, I was going to say metro modern. So it's going to look nicer and newer. And it's going to have some of the fixes for some of the sign-in stuff to make it easier for the user. But at the same time, it is something that is not expected because it's a new page that people have to understand. So they have to know it's safe. They have to know it's something that they have to go through, and they have to know what to enter in there. All right, so that is end users. Let me just take a quick sip, and I'll be... Okay, I've talked about IDM pros multiple times, identity management. In most companies, it's a very large IT team in large companies. It's something that you have to start working with. And this is, you know, as a SharePoint admin, you don't have to talk with them. If you look at the Exchange admins, they often spend a lot of time with them because Exchange has a very deep relationship with AD. And so you just can't actually do Exchange without talking to the IT admins. The IDM admins. And so this is something that's new for the SharePoint side of the house. You'll notice the big pipe is run by someone else, not you. And what decisions they make affect both end user experience and correctness of the system. And so I'll go through some of the stuff that is in there. So the first thing is shared protection. So the place where ADFS comes from and where it's used today, it is used for securing external vendors or external partners or external sites. People have tended not to use ADFS to do their day-to-day job and being productive. And so there's a bunch of things that they have optimized for that you might have to re-optimize for a new use case. And so that's something you have to sort of talk through. Consistent experience. So one of the things that we did is when I did the demo, you notice when Office 365 sent the page to ADFS, there was a username equals venkivi@microsoft.com. That was something we do to tell the corporate ADFS, hey, this guy already typed this username in. But the ADFS is owned by your organization. It's not owned by us, right? And that page, that the user experience of that page is written by some team inside your organization. And so they need to be able to take that username, put it into the right place, and allow for keep me signed in. And those things did not happen automatically. I can tell you in SharePoint, we had to work at it like for a long time before we got that part in. For instance, we didn't have the keep me signed in button because it was an extreme policy that says, look, keep me signed in is considered dangerous. And we said, well, but we kind of really need it because otherwise every time someone opens up a browser or every time someone opens up a document, they have to sign in again, and it's killing us. And so over time, slowly, they were like, oh, look, we have to sort of move the needle slightly differently. So we did have to make that decision to do that. The final one on the balanced security, there's a thing about token timeouts. Again, this is much like the cookies. Token timeouts is a favorite way for people to sort of get security going, which is like the shorter the timeout, the more sure you are the guy signed out quickly, right? The problem is that when you're using it to go check your fidelity and you're doing single sign-on, that totally makes sense. It's a single session. I go there, do the thing, and I come out. What happens if you're in Word and you're writing a document and you type the thing in, go to a meeting, come back, and you try typing again, it's like can't save because I can't sign in, and it pops up a thing. Like, that drives them nuts. It drives end users nuts, and it drives me nuts too. So again, we have to go explain the use case and saying, look, we are using it for a different thing now. I need to think about how to pick different settings to get the experience correct over here. And again, a lot of the times you can actually make this decision just about Office 365 because ADFS knows who it's going to issue the tokens to. And so it's not a free for all that says, hey, look, the camel entered the tent and now suddenly everything is, you know, low security because we've sort of let everything out of the thing. You can actually make these decisions just about Office 365. So you need to have that conversation. Okay, so that's sign-in. One other thing I did not talk about. For the experience, you notice how when we did the sign-in, we had the Office 365 page, and then we had the black page, which was the Microsoft page. They just didn't look like they were from the same family of stuff. Funnily enough, they were both Microsoft products. one was the RIT team sort of building a great-looking page that was modern and sort of cool. And there's what Office Azure AD had done. And so one of the things you had to do is, because that page is something that's owned by your organization, you might consider aligning that with your Office 365 page as well. And so you have this sort of single page that sort of experience that sort of flows through, and you sort of design for that case, not just simply say, this is what we have. When we originally started the ADFS installation, we had two pages, not one. And one was blue, and that had our own version of HRD. And then we had a second page, which was black, that had this thing. And so people had to go through three pages to sign in. They had to go through the org ID page, then go to the blue page, and go to the black page. And it was like we were the butt of jokes for a long time. Which is like, really, this is what you want me to do to sign in? But over time, we sort of get that thing going, and we actually had the conversation to get that streamlined. Okay, directory. So this is actually more fatal. Problems will come from here. So two things. One is completeness. Other one is cleanliness. Start with cleanliness. One of the things we're trying to do with Azure AD is we want to make sure that stuff coming into the directory is cleaner than what's actually on-prem. And we're using this as an opportunity to sort of like clean up our act. Because if you know, if you looked at most of your ADs, there's a lot of cruft in there. There's just stuff hanging out from different apps and over time. And so we're using the sort of the cloud onboarding as a way to sort of like clean some of the stuff up. And so, for instance, we want security groups to have names so that people can actually refer to them. We want to, what's the other one here? The UPN, as I said, is an optional field in AD. And it's actually, there's an implicit UPN that is sort of built as a domain, you know, alias at domainname.corp.com. And there's an explicit UPN that you can set. And many people don't set that thing. But we depend on the UPN as your login name. And so if you don't have a UPN, that user doesn't get synced, right? Now imagine the situation where you say, hey, I'm signing up for O365. Can you please install DirSync and copy all the stuff over? The thing is going to say, I'm done. Then one of the guys who doesn't have a UPN, he's going to go in there and try to sign in. And it's going to say, this user is not found, or something to that effect. And the end user will be like, what do you mean? I'm a user. I'm here. What do you mean not found? Right? And then he goes to the on-prem thing, and it works great. And the reason is, somewhere in that DirSync pipeline, this record got rejected because it didn't have the stuff. So there's a bunch of cleanliness requirements that we need you to work through. And it's very, very people are reluctant to start doing that work because depending on the organization, there's a bunch of cruft in there. And so sort of getting some of that stuff cleaned up is an important part. So we created a big work stream to actually sort of use this as an opportunity to clean stuff up. So groups should have names, they shouldn't collide, so that's cleanliness. Completeness. So this is actually, I think, of all the things we've found, the most problematic. It's because of the following. There's a meme around, oh, I'm going to move some users to the cloud, right? Which is kind of makes sense. Except when you think about Exchange or Link, which are sort of user-based, it totally makes sense. I'm going to move five people to the cloud. I'm going to move their mailboxes. It makes sense. But in SharePoint, it's not a user-based thing. It's a content-based thing. So you're going to say, I'm going to move this team site to the cloud. But the people who are in the team site, who access the team site, can be anywhere in the company, right? And you can't guarantee that the person doesn't want to share it with someone else. So you might say, oh, this team, so I'm going to put these 20 people in the cloud. But what happens when the guy wants to add the 21st person and he's not there in the picker, right? So filtering on the way up is a sort of seductive choice because it speeds things up. You know, you feel control over the thing, but you end up sort of like really breaking the fundamental promise of SharePoint, which is you can share with anyone. And so you open the picker and there's like this arbitrary list of people in your corporate AD. And so they get very confused. They're like, I used to be able to share it with the person on-prem. When I go to the cloud, I can't find the people. That's not good. There's an equivalent version for groups. Oh, I don't want to take all the groups up there because there are really some big groups or there's some old groups. But since you don't know and the IT admin doesn't, the IDM guy doesn't know who's using which group for what, suddenly someone's going to go into the site and say, access denied. And they're like, I used to be able to access the site. How come I can't access it now? It's because someone chose not to export the groups that this guy belongs to. And so when we tried to get into the site, we said, hey, do you have this group? No. No access for you, right? And so think through very, very carefully, and this is an explicit decision on what you sync to the cloud. The ideal case is you have a perfect copy of what's on-prem and online so that all the same things happen. Practically, it's kind of hard because of the legacy and there's a bunch of stuff around it. One of the hard things is we don't sync all groups because there's a technical constraint around 15,000 members per group. And so if you have lots of people who are using large groups, then you want to think about how to split them. And you have to say, oh, I'm going to ACL them, you know, to big group one, big group two, big group three. You do that often for mail. Very large distribution lists are often split into smaller distribution lists. So those are the kinds of things you need to think through, because that depends on what's in the content. And the general view of like, oh, I'm going to filter this stuff out so I can make a small attempt at the cloud, it's great, but you should just know there are all these downside effects. And so, and don't be surprised by them, because they will call you and say, I tried to log into my SharePoint site, I couldn't. And you can't figure out why it couldn't, because the guy's there, everyone says things have been synced, but there's just information's not there. Right? So think through that a little bit. So I think that these two, sort of getting the directory right and getting the sign-in experience sort of work through, that's one of those other big things you're going to have to do as a workload with your IDM peers. And that's new. And so I think sort of I want to let you guys know. And then finally, what can you do yourself? It turns out when you do all that work, this stuff becomes very simple. So plan for groups. So you should certainly work through, you know, oh, my content has all these groups. Most of your most migration tools and stuff will find the equivalent group in on-prem online. Will ACL it. If it's a big group, you need to have a plan for how to ACL it multiple times. Let's see, what else did I have here? Support. So it turns out every single error condition anywhere in the pipeline will show up as SharePoint not working. It's kind of annoying. So one of the things you have to have, and we internally call this a battle card, which is we have to figure out when an error happens, how do we know whose fault it is, right? Which is like, it might be your fault, like maybe the groups didn't exist or whatever else it is, or it might be like the user didn't get synced or the group didn't get synced, and you have to say like, oh, for this set of issues, you should all talk to these guys because they own the problem. For this set of issues, I have to work on the problem, or for the other set of issues, I'm going to call Microsoft because their software doesn't work. One of the three is true. We just don't know which one. And so having a plan on how to decide which one is which is an important aspect. Otherwise, they'll be calling you and you won't just don't know what to do, right? And we've had, in beta, we had customers call up and say, this doesn't work. And we go and we look around and we're like, but this can never work because the piece of information required is not here. And then we go and let them know. We're like, hey, you know, this user has no groups that has access to the site. And they're like, huh. And then the way in front of the group thing is they hadn't synced all the groups. They just said, we're going to only send users. Groups are optional, right? And so they just didn't do the groups because they didn't want to sync and it took time. And so those are the kind of decisions you need to sort of think through. So there is a new set of places. So there's tenant admin. There is, you know, that itself has roles-based access. So you have to make sure with your domain admin, who's going to be the sort of Uber tenant admin, whether you have permissions to the right places. So there's a bunch of sort of work on that one. And then finally, the easiest way to is to do a trial run. Get some stuff in there and then work through sort of these kind of issues. Almost all of this stuff is actually in our documentation. It's just I wanted to sort of call it out explicitly. It's just not doc. It's actually like a bunch of work that is not running PowerShell. It is actually like having a discussion and changing people's minds and having a new point of view. So that's what you should do. With that, I am almost on time. Okay, perfect. Key takeaways. You got a design. You own a part of the experience between you and your, I mean the organizational IT, especially in the case of federated users. You actually own a key part of the experience, which is the login page on-prem. And don't be like us, who just assumed, hey, ADFS already is working, just connect to it. It was just nothing but a source of confusion for all of us. And so we got good at it, and we sort of worked on it until it got pretty good. Educate end users, like, that's not the mistake we made. Just roll it, right? Content moved. We didn't tell them what's changed, and they were all confused. And you know, these were senior people in the company who were just like completely confused how what happened to them. And of course, when senior people get confused, it's more problematic for me, because they'd be like, the stuff doesn't work, thank you, what's happening, right? And so we had to go and find out what happened, and we realized it was just we just didn't tell them what to do. And that's some of the reasons why we do dog food, because we don't know all these lessons up front. But I'm happy to sort of know that is a thing we should do. And then I can't emphasize enough, you got to find your partners and work on it. And that actually was the biggest learning and the most painful for us, because we just did not have a relationship, and we started building it after the fact, after people started complaining. And that was just like cart before the horse. So with that, I'm going to stop here and open it up for questions. Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
I work for a smaller company, and we're running non-federated, so it's not as big of an issue. My question, though, has to do with external users.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping you were going to address the whole live account issue and how they log in. For example, when you first brought up that login screen,
yeah,
it had a username field and a password field,
yeah,
and in real tiny print, it showed if you have a Hotmail or a live account.
Yes.
People don't read that.
Yes, we know that's a problem. Our next round of updates actually does solve that. We also have if you actually type in your Hotmail user ID on the top field, it'll redirect it. So if you say, I'm venky@msn.com, and I click tab, it'll just redirect me back to Live ID.
Well, we set up the Live accounts using our same domain, so they have a domain account redirect address.
I see.
So it confuses Office 365 and doesn't work.
Yeah, that is tough. And so that's something we are working through in our new modern UI to get the live stuff to be more clearly understood and only showing it when we think people are coming in via an invite or something else like that, so people actually understand what they're trying to use. And once you use it once, then we'll remember that fact. And so you're able to actually just then press a button to go to the new to go to live instead of trying to type in every time.
So that'll be all part of 2013?
With a service, we get to update it over time, and this is the next round of stuff we're working on, which is to clean that UI up and be more, the live stuff is not great, and so we have to sort of be able to fix that.
Yeah, problem. I've got 125 people that I'm trying to teach how to log in. And
yes, with that little link. Yes, the link will get bigger and more prominent. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Question? Really? Okay. All right, thank you.